Welcome to another exciting episode of the Path to Manliness podcast. I am Ryan Fellman, and this bright, bushy morning, I am joined by my friend across the pond, Mr. Benjamin George. Benjamin is a man of a lot of alive ideas. I met him through the Ion Media guys, actually, who I think it was Chance introduced me to those guys officially. Chance Lunsford, Logo Centrifugal, who's also got a great podcast. But I don't even remember how long it's been. We've been talking with each other online for like, I don't know, 5-6 months or something like that, maybe longer.
It's a bit longer.
About that long?
Yeah, I think like around since December, because I remember like I joined the groups and stuff and around December and you started adding me to like the boost groups and stuff.
Yeah. So Benjamin, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone here real quick if they don't know who you are, which I think most people do.
Okay. So Ryan, I'm Benjamin George. I don't know, I'm just Spaniard with a Twitter account and apparently lately shit posting and talking about relationships and behaviors on Twitter, more like focusing on the whole idea of just maybe in a fun way pointing out things in which we all fall and the first one to fall into, and that maybe makes us slaves to ourselves or slaves to relationships.
Or slaves to an invisible boss.
Yeah, slaves to an invisible boss, slaves to the dopamine hits, slaves to follower counts. Yeah. Kind of like having, I've lately think I'm writing more focused, maybe in my own fun way, shitposty kind of way with memes and stuff, but like as a way of becoming more independent thinker of how we all, you know, in either we're all parts of echo chambers or part of, we all follow trends and we all kind of like imitate others and maybe sometimes it's not as good. Or maybe sometimes we don't have that much. Maybe sometimes we're getting carried along or getting carried away. And it's not because we want to, it's just because we follow momentum so much, we lose sight of where we originally wanted to go.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that. I think I mentioned this recently somewhere, I forget, maybe in a tweet. But a lot of people are constantly just following whatever trend or whatever the popular people are talking about. And I don't think it's really apparent to most people. You don't notice how much like the public discourse can like be infectious. You know, somebody will start talking about gamer girl bathwater and then everyone's talking about it and it's like all over your feed and it's hard to ignore and everybody's got to have their take on it. But you're good about this too. But one thing I've recently started doing a little bit better of is taking breaks from Twitter where I'll still tweet, but I don't necessarily look at the timeline as much. Like I spent about a week away from it recently. And when you do that, you come back with a little bit more refreshed mindset and you speak a little bit more independently where there's, if you're constantly plugged in, so to say, I mean, you can't help but be influenced by everything.
Yeah. It's like getting out of the river to get dry and just, you know, sunbathe for a while and then you come back and you've got all the energy to swim again kind of thing.
Like, yeah.
It's like, it's really like, one of the few things I've been doing is like, instead of being really focused, I used to have Twitter breaks by basically deleting my account, but I think it's a bit of an aggressive measure. But now what I do is basically maybe the longest I've been is around 10 days where I basically just tweet because I don't have the app on my phone. I use the desktop to go on the Twitter. And one of the things I do is I tweet from my phone, but with a buffer app. So I spent like 10 days without reading DMs, notifications, or even logging on and just tweeting. And it's good because you don't have the feedback. You just write, you don't need the feedback. And then you just write about whatever you want. Because one of the things I noticed is that maybe you can write and then you write a few tweets and then you can spend a whole hour just answering people or liking and retweeting, whatever engagement, you know, engagement with followers, I guess.
And I definitely get that. You know, I think everyone falls into that trap of like trying to get more followers and trying to get more likes, retweets, whatever. It's not just Twitter either. A lot of us do that on Facebook with her pictures of food and our kids or whatever. But, you know, I didn't realize how much I was chasing it at certain times until, this is kind of weird, but when you hit 10,000, you don't see your Twitter account going up as much. It says 10.1, 10.2. And every once in a while it bumps up. So you don't see it as often. You kind of stop caring about it. Like, I actually, as soon as I hit 10,000, I was kind of like, I feel like I just finished a video game and I don't want to play it anymore. But then it becomes fun again because you kind of stop paying attention to the stupid metrics and you just start speaking your mind, interacting with people. And, you know, that's where the real fun part of Twitter is, the interactions, the relationships. So I was, I wrote a blog post yesterday, which actually I thought was a really good blog post, but the title was bad, I think, so it didn't get very popular, talking about how I created this podcast. And I was kind of reminiscing about how it's really interesting how I got to talk to Zuby on a podcast. I got to talk to this girl, Cynthia Thurlow, who's a nutritionist, and she's been on like these TED Talks, have gotten a million hits, and all these amazing relationships I've made through Twitter. And, you know, that's worth way more than whatever your follower count is. Mm-hmm. You know, I think go ahead.
Yes. I think the final number is just more like a social proof kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
I've got less followers than you. I've got like 3,600, something like that. And a few months ago, I stopped chasing followers and engagement and stuff like that too. Like maybe not at your level, obviously, but it is true that really when you zoom out, having a few thousand up, few thousand down doesn't really mean anything. It's good for like social proof because like if you see a person who follows 100 people and has a few thousand followers, well, you say, well, you know, they've got something to say, or at least, you know, it piques your interest. I think everyone can admit that at least you can say, okay, well, maybe they're not doing any follow back. They're not doing any, you know, any just retweeting. They're actually writing for themselves. So I think that works in a sense as social proof, as proof of work. But like what you're saying is like, in the end is what you do with the followers and who follows you really. Cause I've had maybe, you know, I had a follower once, this T-ball guy, the XK Pax kind of guy. He's got like 40,000 followers, and he unfollowed me. But I mean, even the month around he unfollowed me, he never really interact. We never really interacted with each other, so that doesn't really mean anything. But for example, you follow me and we interact, or maybe a guy like Life Math Money or AJF, you know, they've got thousands and thousands of followers, and we interact. Well, that probably means more than having, I don't know, Taleb follow and not read all any tweets, you know. So in the end, like you're saying, it's what you do with the followers and who you talk to. Because I mean, sure, maybe you have, I don't know, maybe you have Latimore, for example, follow, but if you don't engage, it doesn't really mean anything. It's more like ego saying, oh, look, we have big accounts following, you know.
So yeah, right.
I agree 100% with you say. It's like what you do with the followers and what you do, like the connections you make, basically.
Yeah, so that's got to be interesting when you delete the app. I remember when you would delete the app, you'd be gone. I'm like, oh, did Benjamin get suspended? Did he quit Twitter? I don't know. We always freaked out. But no, it becomes an addiction. Having it on your phone can be, you know, like constantly pulling you back in. So you say you tweet through Buffer. I mean, do you delete Twitter off your phone permanently, or is that just like a once in a while thing?
No. So I haven't had the app on my phone for like months and months and months.
Wow.
I go on the browser and I go on the Ion Media account because that needs, sometimes it needs a witty answer. But the thing with the Ion Media account, we only follow like 50 people in there.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, like if I lurk from the account, it's only going to be 5 minutes and I'm gone. You know, in my account, it's like, it's not to brag or anything like that. But if you keep up to date with notifications, like it's going to be like over 100 notifications every few hours, and it's just impossible to keep up.
But yeah,
I need to physically be removed away from that, because because I don't like ignoring people, so I'm going to be answering people, at least liking, and it's just too much.
Yeah, I casually check it on my phone every so often, but then I have it on my computer too. So like this morning I came back to it and there was like 190 notifications from, I don't know, 5 o'clock yesterday till today, so like 14 hours.
Yeah,
it just becomes unmanageable, and it's only getting worse. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get what you're saying. It's like I ignore people, but I don't do it intentionally. So like if someone says something to me and I don't respond, it's not always that I didn't want to. It's just I may not have even seen it. But like, once you start hitting that 3,000 mark, right around there, that's when it starts getting to the point where you just can't interact with everybody. You can try to, but yeah. The one thing that works for me is I'll go through my own profile instead of the notifications and just scroll through and read the comments on each post that I make. I guess way faster than sort of all the likes and the retweets and shit. But
oh shit, I swear I do that the same. It's like notifications. Like, okay, I wrote like 5 tweets through the Buffer app. I'm just gonna click on them and see if somebody quote tweeted me and I couldn't see it. Well, sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame too. That's like the best way to promote your stuff too. Then you can retweet as many times as people quote tweet it. Yeah. So So I remember your account started out like most, where it was slow but steady growth, but then it started getting bigger when you wrote the cognitive biases thread.
Yeah.
And then you were, it's funny because you were telling us, you what now?
And then I stopped writing threads.
I was just going to say, you started telling us the DM, like, I don't want to be known as the thread guy. I don't want to write these threads. but you write such great threads, you know? So, like, what's your process with the writing? Is it just, do you actually just sit down on the computer and type them out? Do you write them out in a document first? Do you put them on paper? What's your deal?
Well, I mean, most of my followers I gained with a few, like, around January, February, with a few, like, good threads and stuff that I wrote on, like, you know, the cognitive biases, the mental models and stuff like that. But I mean, they weren't really, I mean, it was basically adapting or summarizing, you know, some other thing that I read, you know. So, like,
yeah,
maybe I'd read an article on I don't know, an article on the FBI tactics to whatever, no, or the CIA maxims or whatever. So
yeah,
like, I'd summarize them, I'd try to have like every idea in one tweet kind of thing, because obviously, look, writing a thread is not just like writing a blog post, you know. You need to, every tweet needs to be independent
and, yeah,
and be like retweetable on its own kind of thing. It has to be its own thing. And it's basically just adapting interesting things that I'm reading, and I say, oh, look, I want to share this, you know. Obviously not say this is mine, because it's not mine, and add a link at the end saying, look, this is the source, follow me if you agree and stuff. But one thing I found is, like, the thing with threads is really, like, condensed threads like those, people that read them will share them because they're condensed, and people that don't read them will share them to pretend they read it and they'll, you know, think it's part kind of thing. So, like, you read the first tweet, you read a few there, so, oh, this is a good thread, and then just retweet and not read the rest. And the reason I know is because, like, the first tweet would have, like, on the cognitive bias one, it was around 40 tweets or something like that. So I remember the first tweet had like 500,000 impressions and the last tweet had like 10,000, you know. So it's like, you're not reading, you know. It's like, I know nobody's reading this, but people share it anyways.
And yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The thing was, back then when I used to write, because I stopped doing this, back then what I'd do is, like, I'd actually write on a separate document, because the thing with threads, if you write them directly, if you click outside by accident, it all gets lost. So I'd have a draft written, more or less saying, okay, I think this fits in a tweet kind of thing, and then I'd just adapt it. Two reasons I stopped doing that is, one, I'm basically not reading as much as anymore, because I'm writing more than reading now, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Last time I read a book was like 2 months ago now, like a whole book. I read articles and I read and I watch podcasts and stuff like that, but like an actual physical book, probably like 2 months ago. So, like, one, the source of inspiration is less, and the other one is, I didn't want to spend 2 hours writing a thread, you know. I mean, what if nobody reads it, you know, and you basically spent 2 hours doing nothing.
And yeah, that's always the concern, isn't it? Am I wasting my time writing all this out?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I didn't want to be boxed and the thread guy, because I remember I wrote a few more threads. And then I don't know, once I wrote something and like some guy said, basically, you know, like, don't step out of your lane and just write your threads. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
It's crazy, like, how people think they can, like, own you. Like, they think that you're supposed to be there to dance for them like a monkey or something. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, you know, it's like, not sorry, really. I mean, the whole idea, people get angry because they follow you because of one tweet or two tweets. Yeah. And they think all of your tweets are going to be like that, you know? So, like, they see one photograph of you and they want to imagine the whole life. They want to imagine your whole life and personality over one photograph. It's bullshit. Yeah.
I've got like two responses for those kind of people, because I just don't have the time or patience for it. One is, I just say, unfollow me. And then the other one, and I stole that from Jocko Willink. He said that on a podcast where he's talking about all he does is post the picture of his watch, and somebody said it was stupid. He goes, all right, unfollow me. I'm like, yeah, it's a perfect response. And then the second one is, it's like, you know, I don't care. Like, if you don't like what I'm saying, go do something better. If you think that you're so great at it and you think you can do better than me, go ahead. Do better than me. I don't care. That's fine with me. It's funny you mentioned how people don't read through your threads, though. And for people that are listening, they can't see, but Benjamin's got quite the book collection behind him, which apparently he hasn't been reading lately. But I do know you're well read. And I was reading a book, and I read like 6 books at a time, so I have no idea which book I read this in. It may have been iGen, which is about the generation below the millennials that have no attention span and apparently are not having sex or being sociable in any meaningful way, aside from online. But one thing that was being brought up was how people read significantly less books. Like a majority of the population, especially the younger generation, these iGens. So I guess it'd be like 24-year-olds and younger or something like that. They, so they're only reading like 2 books in a year or less. I mean, I never considered myself a reader when I was younger, but I mean, I would always get through at least a couple of books a year, if not more. And now, I mean, as I'm getting older, I probably read, my goal is to read like 24 a year, and this year I've been a little behind, but I'll probably catch up. I think I've read like 6 to 10 books somewhere in there. But it's amazing. I have to deal with people's attention span where they don't want to sit through and read a book. They don't want to sit through and read an article. And as you were saying earlier, they don't want to sit through and read a thread. It's crazy. If I could tell young people one thing that would give you a massive advantage amongst your peers, amongst everybody, is just read, because no one does it anymore. And you can tell the people that do, because they sound so much more intelligent, so much more interesting. They're not just repeating some dumb ideas that they heard from a TV show or a GIF. Or, mm-hmm. I mean, how old are you, Benjamin? You're a little younger.
I'm 24. I'll be 25 in a few months, but I'm 24 right now.
Yes. I mean, do you see that with like the people you hang out with about how they have no attention span. They can't sit through and read a book or even watch a movie.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, it even happens with I even see it with myself. As I used to read, like when I was younger, I'd spend all day reading. Like I would read loads and loads. I mean, here in my house, like in my parents' house, we have like over 3,000 physical books. Since I learned how to read, I'd be reading and reading and reading. And now I find it much harder than before, because it's because fiction, I don't really read fiction anymore. I used to read, you know, like the typical dragon stories, science fiction, dragons and fantasy and stuff like that. I grew out of that. And when it comes to like reading now, I read more nonfiction. But the thing with nonfiction though is, you get a book like The Black Swan from Taleb, or you get a book of deep nutrition and stuff like that. And really, when it comes to nonfiction, you're reading because you want to gain the idea. And the thing with these books is like you have 300 pages of going around the same idea. So like once you internalize the idea, I kind of like lose the interest in the book. So I read The Black Swan. Once I reached the idea, I stopped reading the book. So I've probably read like 100 pages of it and haven't finished it because I already know what Black Swan. Yeah, sure, maybe I don't know 100% what the meaning of Black Swan is, but I gained the goal that I wanted. So like bringing back to the question that you said, yeah, it's like people don't read because I think we're more used to now, people my age, we don't watch television anymore because we go to YouTube, we go to Netflix, or, you know, we don't just sit on the sofa and say, oh, wonder what's on today. And we'll go through all the ads and basically just see what's going on. No, say, I want to watch something like this. So you go to Netflix and you choose, and I don't want any ads. You know, you want it now, and you don't want any of the fluff. You don't want to wait.
It's weird. I still have cable or satellite, I guess, because I always watch the UFC fights, and that's about the only way I use it, which is really dumb because I'm paying for satellite, then I'm paying for ESPN Plus, then on top of that, I pay for the fight, and I don't even use the satellite. But every once in a while, I'll be hanging out downstairs, whatever, and I'll turn on just the TV, watch something with the kids or a baseball game or something, and I mean, it blows my mind how many ads you have to suffer through. And like, what's interesting about it is I used to hate the ads. Now, because of this whole corner of Twitter we find ourselves in, I like to sit through and watch these ads and see what they're targeting. It's like the kind of people that watch this show apparently, you know, like to drink beer, they like to eat all this junk food, they're constantly having like, you know, medical issues and shit, like a lot of weight loss, a lot of, you know, stuff like that. And it's like eye-opening. It's like, because I forget sometimes. I get stuck in a corner where everyone's out there kind of hustling. They got some kind of side gig going on, or at least they're aspiring to. Mm-hmm. And I forget what a minority we are. Like, very few people have their own website or blog or even the Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, most people are out there just watching other people. They're just mindless consumers. And that's what's interesting about the TV. But I'm with you, man. I can't sit through TV anymore. I can't stop. I'll sit there and I'll watch something for 10 minutes, and as soon as there's like a break in the action or whatever, I'll pull my phone out, start looking at something else, or walk away distracted. Yeah. I think TV's dying. It's got to be boomers and older people that are watching, and like, not much else. Everybody else is on Netflix. And you can tell because look at like all the major actors that are on. I think The Rock and somebody else just did some new show on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know, people just don't want to. I think all of us, you know, we're impatient now because we're used to having everything at the palm of our hands. So we want it now. So if we want an idea from a book, we want the idea and we want to discard the rest of the book, because to be honest, most nonfiction books, if you can read a summary, obviously you're not going to gain the same from the summary than reading the whole book.
Right.
Start reading a book. But I mean, I don't think we need to read, because I mean, the thing is, people do read. The thing is, we don't read, the format in which we read is not as, you know, physical pubs are not as popular as it anymore. But I mean, people read their feeds, their Twitter feeds, people watch videos, people, you know, watch podcasts. So I mean, I'm not hating on people that don't read books, because there's other ways of gaining information. But I mean, it is true that it's a long lost art form, but it's like, you know, like how it's like when theater guys complain about nobody going to the theater anymore and people just watching movies. They say, well, I don't care about theater. You know, there's a million ways of entertainment now, and you can choose. Obviously, maybe there is an art and there is something that you're missing out on not enjoying theater, but I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the attitude of many people when it comes to books. Like, well, I can listen to the audiobook, or I can watch a podcast on a topic and maybe learn even more, you know, or I don't know. There's different alternatives, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. Audiobooks are great. You know, I went on an 8-hour road trip recently and I listened to, I forget the name of it, the Scott Dilbert or Sky Adams book, where he talks about like how he went through all of his issues with not being able to speak and then how he created Dilbert. That was really interesting. So yeah, audiobooks are great. The only downside is I do think there's something to be gleaned from actually sitting down and reading a book. You know, it teaches you how to spell better, teaches you how to write better, how to speak better, your vocabulary is better. I can just tell like when certain people, you know, are constantly making little grammar and spelling mistakes, and being that English is your second language, you really don't. So I can tell you're well read, but there's plenty of people in America who can't say the same. You know,
no, I mean. Yeah, I make a lot of spelling mistakes, but it's because I can't care for checking. Because I mean, in Spanish, I swear my Spanish is impeccable when writing. I've never made spelling mistakes at school, or university, or whatever. So like, I know it doesn't apply the sense in English, same in English. And sometimes I'm more like translating words in my mind than following English structures. I mean, going to what you were saying, it's like obviously there is loads of value in reading because it's more proactive. If you're in a podcast, you're basically just reacting. You're just there and taking it all in. When you're reading a book, it's actually you're making an effort. You're blocking distraction. It's good to have this, you know, a moment for yourself and just like making a conscious effort and beating that the dopamine rush, beating the instant gratification. So I mean, obviously there is value, but I think there's NPCs on one side, but there's also NPCs will be like, ho, you don't read any books, and you're like, fuck off. You know, like I read every day. Intellectuals don't only read books.
Kind of. Yeah. 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 That's, you can sit there and read, you know, 300 books in a year. Ty Lopez, I think, said that he would read a book a day, 365 books a year, which I don't know how good that is for you. If you're unemployed and you have nothing else to do, like maybe, but I think it's more important to read a book, write down a few cool ideas that you get from it, and then do something with that knowledge, you know, because there's people that I've known growing up that were incredibly intelligent, and then they went and got some typical like office space job, and it's like, what's the point? Like, you say you're a genius, but you're making the same money as the average guy next to you that's not. So who cares that you're smart? You're not using it. You gotta go out there and act.
Yes, you gotta turn that potential into reality.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that what you're saying before, that Ty Lopez reads 365 books a year? Well, what kind of books is he reading? I mean, kind of nonsense. I can say the same. I read 365 magazines a year. You know, it's like, what kind of bullshit books are you reading? It's like, I'm gonna go like full Naval Ravikant here, but I mean, read a few good books and just reread them, and you know, no point having all of the ideas in the mind and then not doing anything. At one point, because I assume people in our, at least in our space, were more like you know, doers kind of thing. So I suppose if we get the average guy on our Twitter corner, they probably read more nonfiction than fiction, and probably nonfiction to gain some idea and then apply it, or at least think. I want to believe that. So like, point of having a billion ideas here and then not acting on any, it's like, it's better to have just two ideas and try things and then see how that goes.
Yeah, I get that. You know, and at the end of the day, like, it's funny you mentioned you don't finish your book. I'm a completionist. So I have a hard time not finishing a book. Like, it may sit on the shelf for a while, but I'll get through it eventually. But you have a good point. Like, it's probably a good idea to just shelve a book once in a while once you're done with it, or you've gotten enough out of it, or maybe you just don't like it. But what frustrates me is I'll read some great book, I'll get these cool ideas, and I look back at it like 6 months later, and I'm like, I don't remember half the shit that I read in this thing. Like, it's almost like a waste of time. You know, you just got to focus, like you said, on those, like, those good ideas. One thing that's helped me with that is I don't always do this, but I try to read a book with a highlighter, or I'll make notes about it. This stupid, you know, website stuff that we do helps with me too. Cause like, I'll be reading a book, and as I'm writing down these ideas. I'm like, that's a really good line. I'm going to save that. I'm going to write about it real quick. And then if I do that like once every like 10 pages or so, then I've got like the perfect blog post. I'm like, hey, here's 12 things I learned from this book or whatever. Yeah. And it's, it really helps you kind of get down those ideas a little better and focus on what's actually important instead of just reading a book to read a book. Cause a lot of people, I think, just, you know, it's like, oh, I read the 48 Laws of Power. It's like, you don't get a trophy for reading this book. Like, I know everyone likes this thing, but like, what are you going to do about it? What'd you learn from it? What's interesting about it? And it's a fucking monstrous book. So I'm like 2 rules into it.
I've never read it. I read a summary of 48 Laws of Power. Like,
I'll probably get you enough information.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a general. I'd rather, it's like a lot of these, like I made a video on it like last week. A lot of these strategy / Machiavellian / get ahead of everybody else strategy kind of talk is basically reframing things that have happened. So why not do them and then study them? You know, it's like, I think like what's the point of like trying to think 17 chess moves ahead? Like in chess, you can do it because there's a limited number of options that happen. It's a controlled environment. You know, you have a certain rules. You can't get out of those rules. So you can plan 17 moves ahead. Trying to plan 17 moves ahead when it comes to real people in real life. And nobody's a supercomputer that's going to take in all the variables. So it's stupid. It's like, you're going to have an analysis paralysis and you're not going to do anything. I'd rather just have a few rules of the thumb, a few heuristics, wing it, try things, you know, just like for the fun of it, not just like, I'm going to talk to this person because I need to network, because I need access to another person, because this is going to do well for my personal brand. I don't do that. Like, I'll talk to this person because I found this tweet interesting, and we'll see how it goes. Then maybe there's a relationship established, and then all of a sudden, maybe they can help me achieve a goal. And then I'll notice it by looking back and say, oh, look, like doing this helped me achieve this goal, but I wasn't doing it to achieve the goal. So when you say like these 48 laws of power, like, I swear, every bloody NPC repeats the law number 38. I swear, I remember, like, I've memed it so much, I remember it. It's like, it's think like you must, but behave like others kind of thing. So every artist, every internet artist is writing that stupid little tweet. law 38, you're like, shut up, you know, just do things. And then if you want to analyze them with a different mindset, I guess. But like trying to do things beforehand and having everything planned, I don't know. Seems counterproductive.
There's a lot of edginess that comes with that. This Machiavellian thing, I think it got popularized by, you know, a couple of certain big name accounts that like to talk about it a lot. And then I think it's interesting. It reminds me of how, like, guys think that to get the girl, you got to be the asshole, right? You know, but if you're this pasty little guy that's 30 pounds overweight sitting in his basement playing video games all day, then you go out and be an asshole. Well, then you're just a nerdy asshole that nobody wants to talk to. You know, that's not the point. And they're missing it. They're conflating the asshole with like the assertiveness, but like, you gotta be confident because you have a reason to be confident. You gotta be in shape. You gotta be, you know, a smooth talker, successful.
You have to be fun. You know, you have to, I don't know.
It's the same thing with some of these Machiavellian guys. They think that they see these big accounts that are talking arrogant and they're speaking like, in Machiavellian terms, and like, I don't give a shit what you think, this is what I think, and they think that that's the path to becoming like popular and you know, a big name. But it's not that. That's not what's important. What's important is what came before all that shit. Stuff that they're missing is how these guys are providing value and helping people with pretty much the big three. They're helping people with their health, they're helping people with their wealth, and they're helping people with relationships. You know, and it's not about being a dick to people, but at the same time, like, once you get those things figured out and you're actually providing for people, like, you have the luxury to choose to be a dick or not. And yeah, then when you are kind of a dick, you come out a little bit more confident and a little bit more competent, maybe, maybe not. I think there's good examples of guys that are just assholes that got big accounts, and you know, that it's not like that's the reason why they became popular.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're trash talking to go and fight Muhammad Ali, you know, you have to put your punches where your mouth is, because you're in for a beating if you're not, you know. So like, once you're at the top, like Muhammad Ali, you know, you can, or like McGregor, you know, you can be a show off, you can be showboat, because, you know, the confidence, you have the confidence because you don't have anything else to prove. But I mean, if you're just, I don't know, an edgy teen that's just read The Prince, like I did when I was 17, and spouting nonsense, well, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, it's funny, the talking shit that happened this weekend in the UFC fight. Ben Askren, I think he was 21-0, went up against Masvidal, and he was talking a bunch of shit all week, trying to get him to fight him, and then comes the fight, and 4 seconds in, Masvidal does a flying knee and knocks the dude out.
Yeah, I've seen the video.
You can talk shit all you want. At the end of the day, you got to be able to back it up. And it's all about the action. Yeah.
It's easy to talk shit on online. It's just really easy, because you can basically pretend to have the life. You can pretend to be anyone.
Yeah.
So you can exaggerate everything, make loads of claims, live an imaginary life, and the repercussions are not going to be the same as in real life. Because if I go out in real life pretending to be a businessman, pretending to be an Amazon millionaire, pretending to be a playboy, pretending to be whatever's fancy, or a UFC fighter, real life is going to kick me really, really hard. But online, I'm safe on the other side of the phone, on the other side of the screen. So I can just block people that are against, retweet people that are in favor, and then just create this image of whatever I want to create, really. Anybody
block,
can do it.
Block button's the best button. I love it. You got to use it. I don't even care if people say, like, oh, I won because you blocked me. Like, I don't think you understand how to win. I had, you'll appreciate this. I had a guy the last 2 or 3 days that, like, almost, I don't know how often he was doing it, but I saw it multiple times, so I just got tired of it. But I would say something, and he would just write down underneath it, platitudes. And like, don't forget about the platitudes. Like, he just kept saying that to everything. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've got, like, an issue with, communication, or if you think you're funny, or just trying to get a rise out of me, but it's boring and it's annoying. So, fuck. You know, yeah. It's like, I don't care. Like, it's that abundance mentality. It's like, I got plenty of other people that are more interesting that want to follow me. I don't need to talk to you.
Well, the thing is, it's like this trash talking your way to success. It's like, it's been done so many times that literally every loser with 50, like, I'm sorry for using the term loser, but like every loser that's with 50 followers who wants to grow thinks that they're going to trash talk their way. Like, you should see Ed Latimore's comments. Like, when you see a tweet by Ed Latimore, you get 5 idiots saying, oh, come on, big guy, let's fight, or you're talking nonsense. Why? Because if Ed Latimore answers them, or like quotes, tweets them, or say, man, you're talking shit. I'm saying Ed Latimore because he's a big account, you know, and stuff like that. It happens to many big accounts. All of a sudden, it like legitimizes them, you know? It's like, so if like, imagine if like Muhammad Ali, when Muhammad Ali was a star, I'm on the sideline saying, oh, come on, fight me. And he just says, shut up, man. Like, people will, you know, all the cameras will be on me, you know, and I have got my 5 minutes of fame. And, you know, everybody wants to be the Rocky film and, you know, be a bum and then all of a sudden be a star. But the thing is, people don't realize that this whole being a small account Anon and trying to fight your way into superstardom by basically getting blocked by everyone, because in the end you're just annoying, people get blocked, and then they wave the whole I'm blocked by your favorite gurus because I'm saying, you know, it's like, no, you're just an idiot.
Yeah, I don't understand it. There's a throwaway line in the first Fast and the Furious movie where Paul Walker goes up to Vin Diesel wanting to race with him, and then I forget the name of the guy, but the guy that drives the Volkswagen Jetta comes up to him and he goes, "What, you think just because you box, you can get in the ring with Ali?" You know, and these people think that they're allowed to go skip like the whole process, go right to the top just because what? they can throw a little shit around and talk trash from their anonymous account with a fucking cartoon character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even against anonymous accounts because there's plenty of anonymous accounts with plenty of value. Yeah. But it's the kind of things like, if your growth strategy is based on bouncing off of other success, it probably means you have nothing else to offer.
Yeah, there's like, a lot of people that have nothing to offer.
Yes, I'm not saying don't disagree with people, don't disagree with big accounts. You know, it's like if you have to have a fight with someone, well, you know, if it's defending your ideas, your beliefs, your content, well, do it, you know. But I mean, this whole, I've got 50 followers, I've got 100 followers, I've got 1,000 followers, I need to grow by trash talking everyone and just being a disagreeable asshole and that's it. No, well, I don't know. It's like, it's not a long-term strategy. It's like, you want to grow because people like what you talk about, not because the spotlight's on you because you've been a dick, you know, kind of thing. So like, one thing I'm learning as becoming, you know, I like to call myself a Twitter guru. I mean, nobody else calls me a Twitter guru. But like, one thing I'm learning since I became a Twitter guru is you have to block people.
Yeah.
Because one thing, like what you were saying, block button is best button, because people say like smaller accounts, so like, I've had this issue before. It's like smaller accounts will say, just ignore. But look, I started ignoring, but you don't know. It's like, you don't know what it is. Just because you have a few thousand followers. I mean, you've got 10,000 followers, so you know this much better than I do. But I mean, I'm starting to get people who will just go after me just because I've got over 3,000 followers. For no other reason. Just because I've got 3,000 followers, people will come after me, talk irrational shit. They won't even follow me. They won't, you know, it's like there's not people I've never even heard of. And all of a sudden, all this nastiness and all this aggressiveness. And I'm like, you know, I see the bait. I'm ignoring. But the thing is, if you ignore, then other people, your followers are seeing it, kind of thing. And this is not to be like paternalistic kind of thing, like, oh, I don't want my followers to see contrarian opinions. It reflects bad on me, I think, in a sense. Because if I like to think that where we provide, I like to think everyone has enough drama in their lives. Everyone has enough bad news. You know, you watch the news, it's bad shit. You watch the music, it's bad shit. You watch films, it's all bad shit. It's all negative nonsense. So I like to believe people here on the Twitter, not to be oblivious of reality, but a bit of a safe space. And I'm absolutely shameless about it. Like, people are in a bit of a safe space. So like, I'm not a dramatic guy on my Twitter. So like, you know, I make fun sometimes. I do some shit posts. I may sometimes get into trouble kind of thing. But I like to believe I'm just a normal guy, you know, try to add nuance and stuff. So like, I don't want the people reading me to, I don't know, see some tweet of mine and then seeing five dudes all, you know, piss dick measuring contest to see who's the one who can pick. Like, I don't want people to see that. You know, so I like to be my safe space. I'm shameless about it. I want people that read me to, you know, like, I'm not a negative person, so I don't want, because of my fault, them getting negative nonsense. Because another thing that happens is whenever I have an interaction with a girl on Twitter, it's like all of a sudden I'll be seeing guys like being like, it's like, I swear, anytime, like, say for example, Taylor Burrows or Rachel Bock, you know, like, or Gal Shapiro, you know, it's like recommended follows, impressive ladies. Anytime I'm having a conversation with them, you'll see guys getting in the conversation and talking absolute shit, like dude, like really incel vibe stuff and calling them thoughts and stuff like that. It's like, I don't want that, you know. So what happens? So next time I'm going to interact with them, what's the image I'm giving if there's guys who follow me or follow them saying nonsense? You know, so you need to block them. And you really need to block them.
Yeah, there's something really unhealthy about the way a lot of these guys interact with girls online. I know there's plenty that do a good job, but there are so many guys that, A, just, they call every girl a thought, they're angry about girls, they clearly have some sort of a complex, or this, like, the thirst, where they're just like, oh my god, you're so good looking in this. Like, I don't know what guy thought that it was a good idea to just constantly compliment a girl online and, like, DM Benji, let us know. Have you ever like got some model and said how pretty she looked in her Instagram photos for like 6 months, and then she got like, all right, I'll go out on you, let's go have a date. Sure. Yeah. Like, it doesn't work. Like, I don't, what's the point of it?
I don't know. It's like, I mean, I get there's people, you know, with anger. I get there's people that need to vent, stuff like that. You know, it's like, I don't hate on, I don't know, on incels, on guys with not much success with ladies, you know, it's like, I don't hate on that kind of thing. It's just
no. I mean, it is fixable. Like, these guys act like they think their identity is tied to them being bad with girls, but I mean, it's 100% fixable. I was awkward as shit in middle school, and then I got older, started playing a lot more sports, and stopped paying attention to them, got in better shape, and suddenly girls were interested. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, contrary to popular belief on Twitter, you know, I wasn't successful with girls. Like, I don't say this in an ego thing. It's just like a kind of a meme that everyone says, oh, Benjamin, blah, blah, blah. No, it's like, when I was young, you know, I was really nerdy. I was like 20 kilos less or 10, yeah, 20 kilos, how much is that? It's
like 30 pounds.
Yeah, no, wow. Like even 40 pounds less. Like, at my height, 40 pounds less. I was really, really skinny, pasty looking. I wouldn't go outside. Like, I was really, really white. Had a really shitty haircut. You know, it's like, I was really, really awkward with girls too, you know, because I was, I don't know, not going to say I was a social retard or anything like that, you know, but I mean, it's just, I wasn't just good with girls or with people in general, you know? So like, you know, it is, obviously you can improve and stuff like that. So I don't hate on people that are down in the rut. It's just that I don't want to see that shit on my timeline.
Yeah.
So like, if you want to DM me, DM me, but be serious about it and maybe we can talk. But I mean, don't throw your rage on me, you know? I don't want to be on Twitter and I don't want to be enraged. You know, it's like, I don't want their negative energy coming onto me or onto anyone that's putting me, kind of thing.
Yeah. There's two things I was going to bring up about this. One is, I don't like the negative energy either. It's especially when you have, as you start growing, you're right. That level where it starts getting to be a lot. I mean, it can kind of affect your mood where you start getting a little irritable and angry when you constantly see other people being irritable and angry. So yeah, I try to get as much of that shit out of there as I can. And the other thing is just the time. Like, I don't want to waste my time responding to morons. Like, if I wanted that, I'd spend more time on Reddit, you know. I think Reddit's cool in a lot of ways, but like, God, that place is like straight up cancer. Like, you can't, every time you go on there, people are just taking the piss out of you and being,
I just have comments on
Reddit. Well, shit. Do you ever like see that Reddit meetup where like a bunch of these people met in like real life? It's like, these are the people you want to argue with? Like, fuck, dude. Exactly.
I mean, look at it this way. Like, a few months ago, once my account started growing, a few months ago, I had a bit of a bit of disenchantment with Twitter. I was seriously considering just deleting my account and starting new and stuff like that. It was because I couldn't really handle the pressure of having thousands of people following me. And, you know, I know I joke about this a lot, it's going to sound funny, but nobody teaches you to be a guru kind of thing. Nobody teaches you how to I do now that I learned, but nobody teaches you how to handle all of a sudden thousands of people's impressions, thousands of people. It's like all of a sudden you're going to have people that are going to be extremely nice to you for no reason, and you're going to get people extremely nasty to you for no reason. So it's like nobody prepares for you, because I don't know about you, but I've built myself up in real life in which I don't handle with idiots in real life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't engage with them. You know, I don't, this whole needing to defend your honor on Twitter, I don't need, nobody in real life comes up to me and says, fight me. Nobody in real life comes up to me and tries to shit test me. Nobody in real life comes up to me and tries to, you know, tries to provoke me. I swear, I do not get this in real life. Like, I don't, like, maybe it's the kind of thing where in real life people behave better. And also, it's just, I avoid it, you know? So I don't know you, but I avoid negative people in real life. I avoid negative energy. I avoid I avoid depressive people. I avoid, why? Because I don't want none of that. I want, you know, it's hard to surround yourself with awesome people in real life because not everyone's the same background. So it's easier online. But if I don't put up with bullshit in real life, if I don't put up with nonsense, if I don't put up with teens trying to prove themselves, if I don't put up with unstable people, why should anyone do that on Twitter? Why should we put up with that? It's like,
yeah, no. Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. I definitely in real life, I mean, I'm even the guy that'll go like, to the nicer grocery store because I don't want to be around like the Walmart crowd. Like, you're not even from America, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like it's sometimes I like to go just to see it, but like, I can't deal with that every time I go get groceries. But I mean, like, you go to these places and you deal with like that lower class of just uneducated, brash, angry people, and I can't handle it. Like, I like being around people that are a little bit more polished, a little bit more motivated. Like, it's not whether they're rich or not. I like being around people that actually like give a shit, you know? Like, so there used to be this bar that I would go to back when I was growing up, in Illinois, and it was like full of all the people that just never left the town, which is fine. But you go in there and it's like, so what's up, man? What have you been doing? Like, oh, it's been crazy. Been drinking a lot, having a good time, partying every weekend. And like when you're like 21, 22, 23, it's like, yeah, that's cool. It's kind of fun. It's funny. But then like every year after, it starts getting sadder and sadder because you're starting to see that divide where like there's plenty of people that keep doing that year in, year out. But like they're getting a little fatter. They're getting a little older. They're not looking so good. They're definitely not hitting on every girl in there. And then you've got the other guys that are like, oh, well, so I just moved out to Arizona and I started this new side business where I take these exotic cars and I rent them out to people. I'm like, holy shit, that's really fucking cool. So you just got a Corvette parked in your garage sometimes? Like, oh yeah, sometimes I have to, you know, sit on it. I'm like, that's awesome. You know, like this, yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to actually like go out and produce something, or are you just going to be the guy that mindlessly wastes their time consuming whatever it is, drugs, alcohol, video games, Instagram thoughts, gamer girl bathwater? Don't drink that shit.
Yeah, I mean, my comment is not as much as people's upbringing or people's class kind of thing, because I mean, if I apply that lens of views, like where I live, we're the Walmart of Spain, so you know, so like I'm not a classist in any sense, and I don't mean it from people's upbringing or anything like that. I mean it more in a sense where people who carry themselves as adults and people who just still have living high school mode kind of thing. So like, you know, this high school teen kind of way of thinking where you're still not sure of your sense of self, and you need to basically you form your image bouncing it off from other people. So like you're always testing the limits to see where you are. I don't like people like that, because I'm not 16 anymore. I'm 24. I'm still young, but you know, I don't want to deal with people who will be doing like the, you know, like how kids are rough playing and punching each other. I don't deal with people like that anymore. So like, why do that on the Twitter version, which the Twitter version is people being really aggressive, being really, disagreeable. And, you know, basically everything they do, everything is a contest. I stay away from people like that. Like going from what you were saying, it's like, in a sense, in real life, it's difficult. You know, like when they say you're the average of the five people you spend most time with kind of thing.
Definitely. Yeah,
sure. Everybody wants to be surrounded by winners, but do winners want to be surrounded by you? Where are these winners? You know, it's hard because obviously, you know, like I don't have five people around here, five millionaires with multiple businesses and Lambos, you know, to bounce off. So I have to build myself up in a way. And then in another sense, it's if you can't find, you know, don't be angry at people for them not being what they can't be, kind of thing. You know, I just accept people's like, I know maybe that here in Spain where, or at least in my area of Spain, where nobody speaks English, where everybody like median wage is $11,000 a year and stuff like that. You know, I'm not expecting them to be the people who are going to bring me out of any work or anything like that. You know, I have to build myself kind of thing. So I'm not going to hate on my local friends, you know, who don't have a university degree, who don't even have, who like drop off high school at 14. I can't be angry at them for not being able to be a person that they can't be, you know? So like, I still hang out with them. I enjoy spending time with them, but instead of berating them or instead of trying to, you know, turn them into philosophers, what do I do? And I say, well, look, the pool is too small for me. And while I can't still physically get out of this pool, I can go online. That's why I find people like you, people like the IM Media guys, people, I don't know, Garrett, Chance, James, you know, it's like Niels was like, that's where interesting people are going, because I think everyone in our corner kind of has some similarity in that, in which we have all these aspirations, these goals, these ideas that maybe our in real life, offline environments isn't the ideal place for them to flourish. So we go online and find like-minded people, I guess, or at least follow-oriented people.
I think it's a rarity to find people that do this kind of stuff. You know, no matter where you go, unless you're in like Silicon Valley or something like that, I don't think you're going to find a lot of people. And even there, it's probably still a small percentage. But you're just not going to find a lot of people that are out there like creating info products like ebooks or writing their own books, or creating websites even, you know, and we get stuck in that echo chamber. We see a lot of people doing it, think that there's a lot, but like, where else could you go but the internet to find this many like-minded people?
Yeah.
There is an advantage to your situation though. So you're living in a place where you said the average wage is something like 11,000 a year. So yeah,
that's the median wage.
Or median wage. Average,
yeah.
So the cost of living there is probably pretty cheap, right?
Oh yeah. For American standards, it's cheap. I mean, so, still it's because the wage is it's the second region with the lowest wage out of the 50 regions in Spain, of the 50 provinces. It's number 49. Number 49 in wages.
But my point is, so if you're somebody like yourself who's living in a place with low expenses, your income is not dependent on the standard of living where you're at. So everybody else is getting jobs there that are pretty low wage, but you can go online and get a job that could pay pretty well, and like your money's going to go farther, you know, because I actually do have a job I don't like talk about very often, but it's independent of location. I get paid the same. So if I wanted to, I can go live in Chicago, or I could live in New York or Boston or some crazy ass expensive city and live fine. Or I can live out in the middle of the woods like I do, and my money goes way farther. And I got a family. I'm older. I don't need to go out to the bars all the time. So I don't really need the city stuff anymore. And I like to go shoot guns in my backyard. So I like the country life. Yeah. But like the money goes way farther. You know, I talk to my friends in Chicago that are, you know, making close to the same amount of money as me. And, you know, I'll mention stuff to them. And they're like, how big's your house? And I tell them, like, are you kidding me? I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cheap out here, though. I'm in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. Like in Chicago, it's probably like a $1 or $2 million home. Yeah. But it doesn't cost anything close to that out here. Like not even remotely close. Mm-hmm. It's a huge advantage to be able to earn something independent of where your wages or where your expenses are. So yeah,
it's the Jose Rosado way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, shout out to Jose. It's like I've spoken to him and says, dude, I earn dollars. You know, basically like I joke around on Twitter that Jose lives in a palace. Like he doesn't, you know, but I mean, he lives in a Caribbean island and he's earning American dollars, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that.
He's earning dollars and spending pesos. I don't know what Dominican.
Yeah, I don't know the local coin either. But I mean, it's like he can basically, you know, I'm not saying he can live like a king, but obviously, it's like you're saying, it's like it's not the same, like what you're saying, having your income tied to the place kind of thing. So, like, it's one of the things I'm looking to take this into kind of thing, because obviously, you know, I like to joke around and be an employee. I have made money online. I made a few hundred bucks, you know, kind of things. Like I will be looking for ways to make more and stuff like that. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's always easy, you know, this is like losing your virginity. It's harder the first time, but once you get it out of the way and once you start doing it more and better, you know, so it's like the same, but with money, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
yes. Like, you know about this much more than I do. So I think it's a great thing to do. You know, it's like not having your income tied to your location.
I tell people all the time, and I know like 90% of them are just in one ear out the other, but some of them get it. You got to make $1. You make $1 online, it's a complete game changer. And like, I spent years, like when I was younger, so you're ahead of the curve, but I spent years kind of like watching these guys thinking that like, it's too much work, it's too hard, I'll never be able to make money online. And I just didn't do it. But I pay attention to it. Every once in a while I get bored, I'd watch some videos on YouTube about like building a side income and all this. And one thing that really held me back was I didn't know how to build a website. Mm-hmm. And then I go and find Squarespace, which I've been listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, and he kept advertising it. And I'm like, all right, I want to check this out. So I come up with a good name, and I didn't even necessarily intend on building a website. I just had a name. I wanted to get the domain. And I grab it, and then I start kind of playing around. And then, you know, a couple of days later, I'm like, huh, that's a website. That's weird. You know, and it wasn't Pat's Mailiness. It was Helm of Awesome, which I had before this. And there was all sorts of growing pains, man. Like, I had nice people, too, like messaging me, like, hey, I like your writing, but just want to let you know you got some bad gateways on your site. It's going to like redirects that aren't working and all this shit that I'm like barely understanding. I'm like, all right, I'll look into it. Thank you very much. You know, but when you first start out, you're going to make a shitload of mistakes. You're going to have, you know, stupid things like the link's not working right, dead pages, all sorts of stupid shit. But the best way to learn is to get out there and do it. You know, you can sit on the sidelines and listen to people's advice forever. But it's that, like you said, paralysis analysis.
Mm-hmm. It's what you just explained right there is the reason I started my online journey. It's like in my mission statement, if you call it that way, is like I said, I'm starting my website with no clear direction. I'm starting my Twitter with no clear direction. The only goal, there's two. One, improve my writing. And two, the other one is doing instead of talking, you know? So like I've been a talker all my life. I've been the guy who's read all the books and would nag you and say, no, the theory says this, you know, like the guy doing it, you know? So like I said, I want to be the guy doing it and see what's it about. So like maybe right now, like I've had conversations with people, maybe right now, for example, my personal brand is not as efficient as it could be. Maybe my writing is not as good as it should be. But I'm improving. I'm learning. You know, I've never wrote before. Before writing a year ago, I never wrote. Now I have the habit of writing. You know, it's like I encourage everyone to try shit because, you know, it's kind of proof of concept, you know, kind of like, it's not the same. It's like, say, for example, I have a clear idea of a website I want to launch or, but right now my blog is just more like a personal blog, isn't it? It's not maybe like yours, which is Path to Manliness, which is like, focus on manliness, masculinity, and like improving and stuff like that. So yeah, you have a kind of a clear goal. Mine isn't. Mine is a bit like miscellaneous kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm improving my writing. I'm proof of concept. I don't want to say creating fans, but people know that I'm there, you know, kind of thing. So it's like, all of this can be extrapolated to for as lessons for further actions and for further projects and further things. So like, honestly, it's like this day and age, I encourage everyone to start. I encourage everyone to try, you know, because I actually wrote an email for our email list. It goes out tomorrow, Wednesday. I wrote a tweet about saying, seems like because I've seen a lot of people complain, say, oh, everyone has a podcast these days. Everyone has an ebook these days. Complaining about low quality ebooks, low quality podcast. Oh, it's like everyone has a personal brand and everyone has a video, a YouTube video. So like, I read those tweets and I said, well, sure. Seems like, it does seem to us that everyone has a podcast, everyone has a book, everyone has this. Isn't that great? You know?
Yeah.
Isn't it great that people that have imagination, people that want to do things can do them? Funny thing is, the most common answer was like people pointing out, oh, that's your eco chamber. I'm absolutely shameless about living in an eco chamber where I like to be surrounded with people who do shit.
Yeah, definitely. It is a good thing, like you said. Like people should be happy about it. Everyone has a personal brand or a blog or a podcast, but how many are consistently publishing? How many are persistent with it? You know, like this is episode number 14, I think, of my podcast. So I don't know what I'd like to see the numbers, but like how many people record a podcast and then stop before they get through number 10? So I'll bet you.
Yeah.
I'll bet you half the podcasts that start don't make it to episode 10. And, you know, if you can consistently do something, it's amazing how much better it gets. And I talk to Garrett about this a lot because I don't like to share my numbers unless it's like with somebody that's kind of like going through the same thing. But like my website, last year I thought it was doing well. It was having like a lot of hits and it was kind of an overnight success. And, you know, it helped because I already had like done it before. I already created a website. I already had big Twitter following, so I knew how to do it, so I did it right the second time. But like my website's been like blown out of the water this year, and what I've realized is that once you get about 6 months to a year into blogging, and I'm at like month 13 now, I think it blows up because it's given Google time to like recognize that you're a legit site. People are starting to find you. I've got a shitload of things that link to my site that I don't even know where they come from. Something called yandex.ru. I have no idea what the fuck that is, but I get hits from that every once in a while. It's some kind of a foreign website. I just don't know. I think it's Russian.
Yeah, it's probably Russian.
Yeah. So somebody's like got my shit on some Russian website. But like as time goes on, you start building this thing and it grows and it grows. And I mean, I think it was like in the middle of March or April that I had more website hits, more visitors to my site than the entire 7 months that I was online last year. So, the lesson there is you got to start, and then you got to keep going. And if you're persistent, you know, like it will grow. The one caveat to that is sometimes you got to recognize a dog and just, you know, let it die. But
yeah,
I mean, for the most part, if you're writing good stuff, you're writing content, you stick with it, people will come.
Yes, I really want to use this as a lesson for whoever's listening, because, for example, you can take me, who my site is, you know, medium quality kind of thing. You know, like what we were talking before is like everyone can try a podcast. Doesn't mean that every podcast is worth listening to. Sure. But yeah, everyone, it's great that everyone has the chance. So I started my website. My website is a mess. It's a bit of a mess, you know, because there's no clear direction. And I know because I follow the metrics, you know. So like I don't have thousands and thousands of people reading my blog every month, but you do. And like you don't need to tell me the numbers, you know, but like you're saying you already had one site and you applied all the lessons to the second site.
Yeah.
So this is my first site, BenjaminGJW.com. And I'm learning, you know, it's like people read it, you know, it's like I had some haters say one day, oh, your blog's shit. I was like, yeah, probably. But you know what? Mine. And everything here is data. Everything here is lessons. Everything here is mistakes. And everything here can be taken to the next iteration. You know, it's like, yeah, you're not going to try and make it and hit bigger the first time. You can, obviously. But there's a lot of trial and error in these things. So like, sure, you can start your podcast and maybe not reach to episode 10, but at least you started and you did 10 episodes. And yeah, maybe you didn't have people listening, and maybe you didn't have as much people and you got discouraged and maybe the quality wasn't there. Okay, doesn't matter. You tried, but you tried. You learned. You did. Now you have a vast experience and a vast point of view, which somebody who's never tried it had done. So for example, yeah, us at Ion Media, sure, maybe some people like will say, oh, we don't have that much views in Ion Media. We have over 100 videos now in Ion Media. You know, so like each video we do, each video gets better. A live idea is the show I'm doing on YouTube. I've done 20 videos already, I think. And like, sure, wow, maybe some videos will maybe get like 30, 40 views, others will get 200.
Yeah.
You know? So like, at least when you see the first few ones, you can see I'm completely nervous, not looking at the camera, stuttering all the time, not being able to express myself correctly. And maybe now the complaint is, oh, it's just you're not preparing them beforehand and you're just like letting your mind loose. Yeah, okay, I'll work on that. But now nobody can say I'm nervous in front of the camera. Nobody can say I'm stuttering. Nobody can say I'm not looking at the camera. So it's like what you were saying, it's like now your blogs in 1 month did everything it did before, but it's because you have applied all the lessons of building a brand, all the lessons of building a site from Helm of Awesome. So it's like there's two different stages right here between like, and two perfect examples. You're already like, I'm more beginner stage, kind of like, you know, this is my first site. Like next time I start a site, I'll do better. And you're already at that second stage where you're already doing the second iteration.
Yeah.
And look how successful it's going. So I think it's like, this is a perfect like example. You know, if this is not motivation for someone to start, I don't know what it is.
The biggest lesson that I wish I would have learned was, all right, the biggest one's to start an email list, because I didn't do that one soon enough, and like it takes a while to grow. I can get a lot of people to sign up my website now, but or my email list now, but like it's still kind of a grind. Like I haven't broke 1,000 yet. I think I'm at 700. But it's growing, and that's all I care about. Like it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And the second thing that I wish I would have known, because the first site couldn't do this very well, like at all, is you got to be able to monetize it somehow. Like unless you just want to run a charity website, like you got to pick something that's monetizable. So my first website, it talked about Norse mythology. It talked about kind of anti-consumerism stuff, which it brought a weird audience. People that basically don't want to spend money. They bitch about it whenever I try to like make any money. It's like, you know, this isn't free and it takes my time. And I remember telling people, they're like, look, you can bitch about me like trying to make money, but here's what's going to happen. If this doesn't make money, I'm going to stop doing it. And I, you know, they hear that, they don't, whatever, but it's done. It's gone. Helm of Awesome's dead. I shut down the website, all the traffic redirects, path of manliness. And there's a book out there. If you want to read that stuff, you can buy the Helm of Awesome book for like $5. Maybe it's more than that. I don't even know what I pay charge for it. But the next thing, you know, you got to create something that that people are going to want to spend money on, whatever that means. And that's tricky sometimes, you know. People always talk like they're like niche websites. So I just started another one. No idea at all if it's going to be a hit or not. WranglerLifestyle.com. It's just about buying a Jeep and driving around and all this stupid shit you can do with the Jeep Wrangler. So I like Jeeps. So it's fun for me. Like, I can easily write an article about a Jeep Wrangler and enjoy it. And, you know, whether it's going to be a hit or not, I don't know. But it's got a couple things going for it. One is it's got an easy-to-understand name. Like, I can say it's WranglerLifestyle.com, and you're not going to have a hard time finding it. And two, I can make money off of it. You know, you can sell things like Jeep stuff. Jeep stands for just empty every pocket. Because people have to throw their money into them. So, you know, those are those two big steps. But I mean, there's ways you can monetize your website. I think you have. Like, I'm almost 100% sure that you've made some money on it recently.
The affiliate sales mainly, because I don't really have a book of my own. So, like, I've sold a course or two. I've sold a few books, you know. Through email lists too, you know, like what you were saying before, having an email list. Like, my first affiliate sale was with my email list, you know, like I wrote an email, added an affiliate link and say, look, I'm reading this book.
I don't do the best job tracking where I get my sales from, but I know like most of my sales come through email. And, you know, it's, I like blogging because blogging is more permanent, whereas email, it's gone in a week, really. Like, it's kind of like Twitter. You send something out and it's no one's like hardly ever going to see your tweet from 3 months ago. And then like after 6 months, it's like almost impossible to find. It's weird.
That's why I delete.
Yeah. I think I've got mine set up to delete after a certain amount of time, which is also a good idea because who knows what's going to be okay to say 7 years from now. But yeah, email is one of the best ways to sell, and two, like, it's your lifeline to your best fans. So if one of us gets suspended or whatever, and both of us have been suspended before, it just happens. How long was your suspension? Like a day?
12 hours. But it was like
12 hours.
Because it was like the first one, so it was like a light one. It was for calling somebody else a faggot, basically, you know.
I think that's what I did. I definitely did things when I first started out that were suspense worthy, like barely, but like I got suspended for the dumbest shit ever. I basically went after a blue check mark and she sent all of her followers to go like report me. They did. And like, I screenshotted like everything. Like, it's actually, I think it's on my website still. There's a blog talking about it. I may have taken the post down, but I talked about like what I did, and like, I didn't say anything egregious, like not even as bad as just calling someone a faggot, which is ridiculous, you know?
I called a friend a faggot, you know, it's like,
that's the best part.
It's not even that I was insulting anyone. It's just like, I was just making an edgy joke, you know, and it's not like he reported or anything because it was just instantly kind of thing. So, I mean, it's stupid. It's like, you can't, it's like, it's throwing a year's worth of work down the drain just for being stupid, you know, and
but
instead
you can
of going, instead of going all, oh, free speech and all of that, look, we know all of that, but it's just easy not to write that.
Yeah.
It's just easier to just not write it. That's it.
Yeah. The risk isn't worth the reward. Yeah. You can say that shit in email, though. Like, I'm a little bit more willing to say stupid things in an email, but like, I don't like to say like the NPC meme on Twitter because I can't figure out if or not you can say it. It's weird. Sometimes you get banned for it. Sometimes you don't.
Really?
So I don't fucking know. But you spend a year building up a following of 11,000 followers, and you don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
I know. I could start a new account if I got banned, and I'd probably have 1,000 followers in a day, but like, I'm not gonna have 11,000 followers for another 6 months if I lost them.
I know, but I've thought about that. If I get deleted, I may start a new account and get a few hundred followers, but to reach 3,500 or 3,600, it's gonna take me a whole bloody year again, you know?
But if that happens and you have an email list, you have that perfect lifeline where it's like, hey, this is what happened. Maybe send the email out two or three times. And all of a sudden, all your big followers are like not only going to follow you, they'll probably retweet your big tweets that you send out right at the beginning, so more people see you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's bringing the whole networking and relationships outside of Twitter. It's like, we have Telegram groups, we have Signal groups, I have, I think, people on LinkedIn, I have people on Facebook, people on Slack, you know, Discord. Like, it's like, only because any of us gets our Twitter account deleted, it's not like we're disappearing from the face of the earth. We have many, you know. It's like, I want to believe, you know, like, if I don't know, if I got deleted, for example, and I sat in a new account, you know, it's like, we've got the iMedia guys, I have you, we've got other guys, you know, it's like, people will tell their followers, because, I mean, we do share quite a lot of followers, I guess. So, like,
oh, I'm sure we do. Yeah.
I suppose there's like a few thousand that we all share. And
yeah. Yeah, it's we're in a small corner. It's kind of funny. I'm starting to find myself in different corners, though. Like, I recently had a comedian reach out to me through DM. I love DMs because it's like Russian roulette, you know? Like, sometimes you get a bullet to the head, but you know, 5 out of 6 are pretty good. But like, I had this comedian reach out to me the other day, and whenever somebody DMs me that I don't know, I always click in the profile, see who it is, and it's like, holy shit, this guy like is going on tour, he's going to Australia. I'm like, this is really cool. And then like, he's got his own podcast, I'm listening to that as I'm driving. I'm like, that's a cool connection. Like, I never would have met this guy before, probably, but he reached out to me, and you know, you start meeting some new people. But we're still in that weird corner of Twitter, and I don't know if you have any alt accounts or whatever that are in like different corners, but it's weird how rare you'll see each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because it's like these echo chambers, if you want to call it, these niche corners kind of thing. Is like, even though it's all open and everyone can follow anything, it feels like there's like walled gated communities, you know?
Yeah,
that online. Like, you get, but, like, I don't, yeah,
you do a good job of hedging your bets. So you've got your Twitter, you've got an email list, and then you've got YouTube. So you've got, you know, and then the blog, really. So you've got 4 different like places where people can come find you. And I think that's important. A lot of people get too obsessed with one. I think it's important to pick one and focus on it. Like, I clearly favor Twitter, but then like, you got to do other stuff too, you know, and you just can't, like, what would happen tomorrow if, like, for whatever reason, Twitter shut down and people act like it can't happen, but it doesn't make money. I'm a little nervous about spending so much time on a platform that is not profitable. That's a concern. But then again, if Twitter's down tomorrow, something's going to come up and take it. There'll be a new one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And there's also, there's lessons, like, there's many lessons where in building a following here and building, you know, like climbing up the hierarchy and making yourself valuable, there's many lessons here that, they're at the core of any society, of any things. Like, there's many things that you can do here to grow your following and to network and to gain people's respect that work offline, work in, obviously there's different things that change, you know, maybe what a certain personality trait doesn't translate well for YouTube, for example, but if you know how to connect with Twitter people, you know how to build an audience, you have a lead advantage, at least in YouTube building, for example.
Yeah, people don't realize it, but like, DMing random people on Twitter is just like the light version of cold emailing. So, you know, if you're trying to get a job, you want to reach out to people, like, you've got no problem DMing these Twitter gurus. Like, you can go and take that same kind of concept and make it a little bit more professional, and cold email people in your industry and see, you know, about getting a job or whatever. And I don't know, like, this younger generation, I think they're very shy and awkward and afraid of doing stuff like that. So it's probably a good way to stand out, actually. You know, and like with college, it cracks me up when people are like, oh, college is a waste of time. It's like, well, maybe you waste your time, but it's not. Like, and anybody that thinks that's missing out, there's 2 massive things wrong with that. One, and everyone's like, well, I had good grades. Stop. Doesn't matter. I was like a solid B student, maybe, at college. I don't even know what my GPA was, because it doesn't matter. As soon as I got my first job, I stopped looking. So, and nobody will ever ask after you get that first job. It does not matter. Yeah. Ask George Bush. He was a C student. But the 2 big things. One, pick a good major. People pick these stupid-ass majors, and they're shocked when they can't get a job. And then 2, network. And I did an okay job at this when I was in college. I was too young to figure it out. But if you network with the right people, I mean, you'd be amazed how small some of these industries can be. You know, like, I am running into people I went to college with or people I grew up with all the time in my industry. It's kind of weird. And that happens to everybody. You know, the world's a much smaller place than you think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Americans when they talk about college, because Here in Europe, I pay 1,000 euros, which is around $1,000 a year for tuition. You know, so like here, it makes no sense not to go to college. You know,
right.
It makes absolutely no sense. And obviously, there's also like, you know, like entrepreneurship and business is different here. So like people don't respect a 20-year-old with a business here. So like, I understand Americans where business is more, is emphasized and it costs thousands and thousands and you have to get into depth to study. I understand there's a lot of talk of high ROI or low ROI, but if you can't see the ROI of going to business, it's maybe because you don't, maybe it's your perception of value that it's not as, because everyone here, I think everyone on Twitter is more like engineered, autistic kind of,
yeah,
you know, kind of like numbers orientated kind of thing. So like,
yeah,
they only think of money. So like, yeah, sure, maybe there's low ROI going to college money wise, but what about those connections that maybe they're gonna serve years later on? What about, I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought I had everything figured out at 20, and then at 22 I realized I hadn't. I thought I had everything figured out last year, and now I know I didn't. You know, so it's like, I don't know you, but I don't see many 18, 20-year-olds who are absolutely clear about they want to start a business, about their future, and about everything.
Yeah.
Like, I've spent a few years at university, and I've had time to grow, to experiment, to be more comfortable with myself. I know it's all like gay talk and shit, but I mean, it's really true. Like, it's like this whole discovering oneself and you know, learning all the soft skills, you know, like if you don't go to college, obviously you can be sociable and network without going to college, but everyone here in Spain goes to college, so now I know I've lived the same experience as everybody else, as my co-workers, as my future bosses, as my whatever, you know, so like that's invaluable,
you know. Yeah,
you can't put a numbers value on that, because there's no numbers value. But what about the soft skills? What about, you know, like there's literally loads of American kids, boys, young teens coming onto the internet because they don't know how to go into a party. They don't know how to talk to girls. Why? Because they don't go to party. They don't talk to girls. I've already had, you don't need to go to university for that. But I mean, at university, you're for a few years surrounded by people, you know, like the opposite sex, if you say, and people your age, you know, so it's time to, you know, mingle and talk to people.
Yeah. It teaches you a lot of skills. It teaches you how to be comfortable talking to somebody you don't know, cold approach. Yeah. And not just girls. I mean, like, other guys too, whatever.
Learning how to cook, I can't say that I learned great skills, but I learned how to take something and turn it into something mildly edible, you know, and it just gets better from there. Crock pot.
I mean, maybe it's not enough of an argument for people, I mean, to justify $100,000 tuition. Sure, you know, it's like, if I'm an American father and I have to pay $100,000 for my kid to go to university, and say, look, you're not going to university to go party, you know, to go and do shit. I mean, because, you know, I want a monetary, I mean, I want you to study, whenever I have a son and if I'm in America, I want you to study a degree that's going to pay its dividends kind of thing. You know, it's like, I understand you guys, but this whole hate on going to university, I mean, obviously, if you're selling courses on how to earn money online, well, obviously you're going to say college is shit, buy my course, you know, but I don't hate on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The target audience is people that don't want to go to college or people that want to start earning money, you know, so like it favors that.
Yeah. And you can go to college and learn about marketing. You know, if you want to become like this dropshipping guru or e-commerce kind of guy, get a marketing degree. I mean, you don't need one, but you'll learn some interesting concepts. Like I took a few marketing classes in college and I still use some of these things. Like I learned a lot of interesting stuff. One of my favorite concepts I'll never forget, I learned it freshman year. So like 12 years ago, it stuck with me. It was framing, the difference between saying something like, oh, I don't know, do you want to go get some Chinese food or something? Or like, dude, some General Tso's chicken sounds fucking amazing right now. Like, which one of those is more likely to get your friends to want to go eat some Chinese food? You know, like that simple little concept. Like it's weird how like manipulative you can be when you understand shit like that. Like you can convince people of things they don't even necessarily think they want. It's really strange. And then when you start looking online, you can see like the people that write better copy versus the ones that are just kind of throwing shit out there. I mean, there's definitely a value to it. It's funny. You mentioned your kids. I've been thinking about this a little bit lately. When my kids decide they're going to college, I'm going to make them write out a business plan, like a little page that explained to me what are you going to do? How are you going to do it? What's your degree? What kind of job do you expect to get? Explain the numbers to me. Does it make sense to you? And I'm not necessarily going to say yes or no to what they do, but like, I want them to go through the process and then like look at it. And I think my kids will be smart. They'll figure it out. They'll look at it and like, I don't think this makes any sense. Maybe I should do something different, you know? So.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, here in Spain, if it's $1,000 a year tuition for your kid to go to university, you know, you kind of don't ask these questions. You kind of like, oh, I like business. I'm going to study business, you know, and it just makes perfect sense. You know, it's like, oh, go let them have some fun. Go let them party, you know, get a degree and then get a job, you know. But I mean, if it costs thousands and thousands, you're going to get into debt. Well, obviously, you need to ask yourself these questions. You know, it's like, okay, you motherfucker, you want to study? You want to study? Okay, why do you want to study? You know, like really ask yourself these questions, because before studying business, I wanted to study medicine. And I failed to get into medicine. And a few years later, I realized that I'm glad that I failed, because I didn't want to get into medicine for the good reasons. I wanted to get in there because I wanted the prestige. I wanted the ego. It was just because the smart people wanted to get into medicine. So I was competing with the smart people. And it can happen, you know, because you're basically you're a teenager when you're making medicine, you know? So like what you're saying is like, it makes perfect sense. Like, okay, you want to go to college? Well, give it some extra thought. You know, why do you want to go to college? Is it because you want to party? You can party without going to college. Is it because you want to do what everybody else is doing? Well, you want to do it because you want to do it. So it makes perfect sense. You know, it's like, I have no hate on Americans and their university talk, because I mean, honestly, if I were American, I had lived in America, I would have not gone to college. You know, like paying that kind of money, though.
Most Americans don't even think about it. You know, I'm pretty sure like 90% of them are like, I'm going to college because that's what my friends are doing, or I'm going to college because that's what my parents expect me to do. Right. 18, you're a dumb kid. You don't know what you want. You know, I was always mature for my age and smart, and I had straight A's in high school and all that stuff, but like, I was freaking out. I didn't know what the hell to do. I knew I'd be in something like analytical, kind of logic-based numbers, but like beyond that, I couldn't figure it out. So I went in to be in actuarial science. So that's like those guys that figure out like insurance premiums and shit. Like, so. Yeah. Sounded really cool. I heard you can make like almost $100,000 like right away. And then like after you take a few tests, you can get up to like $1 million. So I'm like sold. Mm-hmm. I go to school, and 2 or 3 months in, I'm talking to all these people in my degree and taking these classes. And I'm like, this is not it. Like, this is not for me. I was struggling. I wasn't doing well in school. And everyone was awkward as shit. Like, they just could not talk. And like, I was clearly the odd man out. Like, I'm the guy going out, talking to all my friends, going out drinking, having a good time. Whereas these guys are constantly in their room studying. Like, they won't even say hi to you in the hallway, but they're super friendly on like Facebook Messenger or whatever. And I almost flunked out. I was on academic probation. I'm like, I got course correct here, but same thing. I was kind of wanting the prestige, the ego, the money. And I'm like, I don't even like this. You know, am I going to spend the next 10 years becoming a millionaire, but hating it? Fuck that. Yeah. So there's a balance between, you got to go out and find something that makes economic sense versus like the revenue compared to the cost of the college. And then you do have to find, like, my generation was told to follow our passion. You know, go out, follow your passion. Just do whatever makes you happy. There's so many jobs out there. The world's great. 2008 financial collapse happens 2 years into my college, and everyone's like, fuck your passion, you better go out and find a fucking job. I don't care if you like it or not. I don't care if you have to move to Ohio, like, find something that'll pay you. It's like, shit, this got real. But there's a balance between that, you know. And you don't know what that's the other thing that really sucks. Like, I mean, it's just pure luck of the draw. And if you're in high school right now or college right now, I'm going to level with you. There's probably a pretty good chance there's going to be a shitty market coming up soon. Like, we've had the longest bull run ever in the U.S. stock market. Like, it could happen next Monday. Mm-hmm. And the world will change. And it's not just numbers on a screen. You know, they actually impact the way the world works. Jobs get tougher to find. Houses become cheaper. So there's just crazy little ripple effects. And, you know, the secret of life, man. Roll the dice.
Oh, definitely. It's like, I grew up as a teen during the financial crisis. So like, we weren't as much as follow your passion. We were like, go study something that's actually useful. You know, it's like, don't waste your fucking time, because people here have no jobs, you know? So like, don't go study music or history or philosophy. You know, go study like business or law, you know, or engineering, or go to work. You know, that was basically this whole, like, the other day I got really angry on Twitter. I deleted my tweets later, but I was ranting on Twitter because there was this conversation of debt, of student debt in America.
Yeah.
That they wanted to pardon the student debt, which, okay, it makes in a bit of a, you know, holistic view, it kind of makes a teeny bit of sense, because obviously, you know, there's predatory tactics and, you know, there's 18-year-old kids basically getting into $100,000 in debt and stuff like that. And basically, if nobody's going to be able to pay it, you know, it's all going to collapse. I understand all of that. But that really hit me at my core, because I'm studying at a really shitty university. Not shitty university. I mean, it's not even the top 50 in Spain, you know. I'm studying in the university in my hometown, you know, living with my parents, because I decided, you know, if I can't afford going to Madrid, which is the capital here, it's like, if I can't afford it, you know, I'm not going to get into debt to study an expensive degree, which would give me a job right after, you know. I don't want to go and get into debt. So, because I think, I mean, I understand maybe guys in your generation who are a few years older than me, that like, there was like before the crisis kind of thing, but like anyone who was a teenager during the economic recession and like is making stupid financial decisions like people made before is an absolute nincompoop. You know, it's like, I don't blame people who lived during the economic boom, you know, and made stupid financial decisions, because it didn't matter back then, and then it came to bite them in the ass. But if people aren't learning from others' mistakes, I swear I have no sympathy. You know, it's like, I have no sympathy for a guy who years after the economic recession gets $100,000 in debt because if you're $100,000 in debt, you cannot afford to study. You know, it's like, I'm not kind of the person of like, stay in your lane, but don't make stupid decisions, you know, like, because if you're gambling, you know, if you buy stock, you buy it because obviously you want it to go up. But if it goes down, you're fucking paying the price. If you lend out money, you're getting an interest rate because there is a chance that you lose it, that you don't get the money back.
Right.
If you're fucking $100,000 in debt, you're gambling, and you're gambling with money that you can't afford. You know, it's like, it's not the same having $1,000 in debt. Anything can be $1,000 in debt and you can pay it off. $100,000, I can't pay $100,000, which is why I don't get into $100,000 in debt. So I don't know, it's just people make just fucking stupid decisions.
There's an economic term called a moral hazard. And what it means is, if you allow people to make massive mistakes and then you bail them out, they're given the courage to go out and make that mistake again. So they're more likely to go out and take a riskier bet. So these guys that are going to get, if, and they won't, but if they get bailed out of their student loans, they're probably going to go out and take another stupid bet and expect to get bailed out again. So maybe they get bailed out, then they go out and buy a $300,000 house and they're living on a $40,000 wage. And then the house gets, you know, repossessed and they're like, look, this isn't fair. The bank took my money. You need to pay me back my debt. Like, I didn't deserve this, because they didn't learn the lesson. Same thing happened back in 2008 with the financial collapse. All these banks, which were supposed to be stores of wealth, became investment vehicles where they were taking risky bets and betting on crazy things, things that they shouldn't have done. In some cases, taking customer funds, and, you know, they bet on the Greek debt and lost when that shit belly up, and they got bailed out by the government, and it creates moral hazard. So what happened 11 years later? They're doing the same shit. They're still making risky bets with savings vehicles that are supposed to be banks, but they're not banks anymore. They're basically giant trading houses.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that would happen with these kids, just on a different kind of scale. But they're not going to get bailed out, because here's the problem with bailing out the college kids. Let's say we give them all their money and everyone's happy. How does the next generation get a loan?
Yeah.
No bank's going to give them money. And if they do, the interest rates will be insane. The reason why student loans are cheap, and they're pretty cheap, everyone thinks they're not, but the interest rates are very cheap.
They're like the lowest interest rates of any kind of debt, I think.
They're absolutely insane, because there are like almost no risk. Like, what's your risk when you give out a student loan to a college kid? The kid dies. I think that's the only way you can lose money on it. Like, they have to pay you. Like, you can't go bankrupt. You know, you're going to get your money back. Mm-hmm. But if there's a chance that the government's going to bail out these kids, then the actuarial science majors are going to go down and say, look, here's what we think the odds are of another bailout happening. Here's what you need to charge to break even. And all of a sudden, you're looking at like 12, 15% interest rates maybe. And that's a real problem, because that's when you get to the point where 12% may sound like a lot. But I don't think people even appreciate how much it is, because it's a lot on $10,000. Yeah. But imagine people like doing that with like, their credit cards. You know, like that's hard to get out of. Now imagine doing it with $100,000. It's almost inescapable. I mean, the interest alone, it's crazy.
No, it's slavery for life. That's, yeah. 12, that's slavery for life.
Yeah, it's like when you have a mortgage, you know, like those first couple of years, the interest rates are, and I have like a 4%, you know, it's super cheap. Mm-hmm. But those first few years, it's like I'm paying down like $300 worth of mortgage and paying over $1,000 in interest. You know, it's crazy how like messed up numbers get when you have a high balance like that. And that's mm-hmm. why the banks don't like people putting zero down on a house, because that interest rate gets all screwed up.
Yeah, well, people just don't understand compound interest.
Yeah, yeah. Go follow Chronicles of Nate if you don't understand any of this shit. He'll explain it to you in a pretty simple way. So
yes, also another thing with like bailing college people is, what about the people who saw the, what about opportunity costs? What about the people like me, for example, that didn't get into debt?
Yeah.
And the people that decided to go and say, just go to trade school. And the people who decided to go to like maybe a community college. Like what happens with them?
What
the
about?
The others get a hand free pass. The others get a degree, get the connections, get everything. And the other ones who made the financial responsible decisions, they get fucked.
Yeah, what about the guy that paid down his debt? And this isn't hypothetical. This is a friend of mine. And he made a mistake. He picked a degree that wasn't good for him. But he wanted to go to a school to play baseball, and he did. Yeah. So he took on 90 grand of debt for a bad degree that didn't pay anywhere near that kind of money. And he stayed at his parents' house for a few years. And he paid like $1,000 a month on a student loan, which is more than he needed to. And then he bought a tiny little house, and he's been like living very modestly. And I think he's either completely paid off or almost paid off. What about him?
Yeah. What about those years?
Does he get bailed out?
Yeah.
No way.
No.
So he gets screwed for being an upstanding citizen who actually like, you know, pays his debts on time and ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You
know. Yeah. It's like, what about being financial responsible? It's like, I don't know. It's like, People play out with the whole, there's predatory practices, they're 18-year-old kids. Okay. They're 18-year-old, true, you know, maybe they're going in. What about their fucking parents?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you're throwing $100,000 to your kid, because now he's a kid or she's a kid, why are you giving them $100,000 in debt? Why are you giving them slavery? Why can't you? It's like, one thing I'll never understand about Americans, you can drive at 16, you can go to war at 18, but God forbid you have a beer before you're 21. God forbid you stay at a hotel with a girlfriend before either of you are 21. You know, like
I've always said, they should like tier alcohol. I think at 18 they should let them have like only light beers. Like you can buy like a 6-pack of Bud Light, but nothing else. You know, like no liquor, and no like IPAs. So let them get used to like the shitty little light beers. And then when they get older, they go to college, they're like not like blown away. Because I mean, my first experience drinking was, let's see, we had Guinness, Rolling Rock, and Southern Comfort. And maybe not something that is currently legal in Illinois, but at the time wasn't. But, you know, but it's kind of a shock to like jump like head first into the pool like that when you probably should be dipping your toes in the water first. But whatever. I don't have any complaints, and it all worked out in the end. But yeah, it's a lot of shock. There's a lot to take in. And that was a big part of why I created this website, because I felt like I had like every advantage growing up. And I'm an optimistic guy, so I really didn't. But like when I turned 16, I had a car. And, you know, it wasn't the greatest car in the world, but it worked. And maybe the muffler fell off about a month later, but these things happen. And, you know, like I had a family that taught me like good personal finance. They didn't teach me like advanced finance stuff. Like I had a lot of money when I first graduated because I got a sign-on bonus. I didn't know what to do with it. And my dad told me to put it in the savings. I'm like, all right. So I did that, which is good advice. But better advice would have been throw it in the stock market. You know, you can always sell out of it if you need to. But he's very risk adverse and I'm not. But I look back over these years and I was so lost, and I needed something to tell me, like, here's where you go to do this, here's how you cook these meals, here's how you live alone, here's how you stay healthy, here's how you stay sane. No one ever told me anything about writing to control your emotions. They just said, like, you have anger problems. Yeah, no shit, I got fucking anger problems. What do I do about them? Like, you know, like, I never got, like, the best advice you ever get is, like, go to anger management. I'm like, no, I'm not that guy. You know, I wasn't, like, that crazy. But, like, I would be upset about things. I didn't know what to do about it. No one taught me, you know, like, you need to stay in shape to boost your mood. So, like, all the stuff is what I'm, like, trying to teach people. And that's why I created the Reclaim Your Manhood book. It's like, all right, if I had a time machine, I'd go back to when I was 22 and trying to figure shit out. I'd be like, hey, turn that fucking PlayStation off. Spend 2 hours reading this stupid little book, and it'll help you out. It'll make you a better person. You'll pick up these little things that no one's teaching you. But, you know, I'm trying to find, like, men's, like, resources and shit, and there was nothing there. I'm going on GQ, and they're telling us why men should wear lipstick. I'm like, I don't think that's really going to help me right now. You know? So, I mean, there's definitely a void out there, man, for, like, self-improvement, help, like, whatever it is that you're teaching people. There's a lot of lost young people.
Yeah, even if, because you teach people, I don't fancy myself teaching anyone.
You definitely teach people. You do.
At least, I like to believe, at least by being an example or a role model, in a sense, you know, I don't want to build my ego or anything, but at least just by how explaining past projections I used to have and I observed, for example, I want to believe people learn something with that. You know, it's like, I'm not a guy who's going to teach you how to be masculine or a manly man like maybe you are, because I'm 24. You know, I'm still figuring things out myself, you know. What I can maybe teach you. Yeah, exactly. It's like, maybe what I can teach you is how to have a bit of a personality and how to stand up for yourself. Maybe I can teach you that. But apart from that, I don't know. I'm just doing silly memes.
You know? Oh, you got a lot of things going for you, man. You're good.
Yeah. And I think I need to leave soon. So I think if you want to leave it at this.
That'll work. Yeah, I think we did good, man. It's been about an hour and a half or so. So that's good. All right. Anything you want to close on? Any closing comments? Any thoughts?
No, I mean, it was a great talk. I mean, one day we'll have to do a talk on economics, finance, and
Yeah. I always forget, like, how, like, well-versed you are in that stuff. Because a lot of people, like, get bored by it sometimes. They don't want to talk about it. But it's really interesting when you get two people that know what they're doing.
I mean, I keep what I know of, or at least I fancy myself to know of, I keep a secret on Twitter. And I just like to talk on Twitter what I don't know of to learn. What I think I already know quite a lot, I'll just keep it myself.
Aaron Clary's one of the older Manosphere guys. Like, he's been doing it for a while. And he talks about, you know, how to get girls and other Manosphere stuff. But he also spends a lot of time talking about economics. And he's got a good following. So there's a market for it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's close it up. Benjamin, where can the people find you?
At BenjaminGJW on Twitter. I'm the same. BenjaminGJW.com on the blog. Please subscribe to our newsletter, to Iron Media newsletter. You know, it's like, we already have, I don't want to say the numbers, but we already exceeding expectations. Already.
It's pretty good. I'm impressed with the Iron. I wasn't sure how we do. No, we're in the hundreds, right? Where are we at? Somewhere in there?
250, I think.
250. I think we just started like a month ago. That's like really good. Yeah, but it's unique. You know, we got a bunch of people on there talking. Benjamin's on there writing emails. I'm on there when I don't forget. So I'll get you one for this week, for next week, I guess.
Chief Chuck,
Jared Huntsman. Davey,
Huntsman, we're all there.
Yeah, it's a good list. So we'll link that down below. We'll link your website. And Ben, it was fun. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right. This is Pat's Mailingist, Ryan Feldman here, signing off.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Pat's Mailingist podcast, be sure to write us a review. That way we can reach more men that are lost and need direction in their life. And if you feel that you are lost and you need direction in your life, or you simply are looking for brotherhood, a sense of belonging, a place where you can be a man, a traditional man, and be around other men who are motivated and working to build something themselves, check out patreon.com/pathtomanliness to gain access to the private Discord server, where you can connect with other highly motivated individuals.